Hi, this is John Delancey, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me today is Movie Revolt Dan. Hello.
Hello.
And Mr. Fridley Sen. Hello, Matt.
Hi.
It's just a guy's night out here tonight for our episode today. There's no hard candy, Mandy. We'll get into the reasons why here in a little bit. But we are back with today's episode to discuss the next in our video game film series, which is none other than the 2014 3D American action thriller Need for Speed. Originally, this was set to be, this would have been the last one we covered, guys, if we had finished back when we, you know, the same year we started this. But now there's a couple other ones that we might have to cover. But this was the last one of the already released video game films when we started this process. And did we save the best for last? We're going to have to wait and see about that. First, before we get to the actual film, though, like we usually do, we talk about the video game. And Matt, go to you first. Did you ever play or watch somebody play Need for Speed?
Yeah, I played, I think I played Hot Pursuit 1 and 2. I believe that's the, like the other Need for Speeds are all just street racing. Hot Pursuit line has police as like a playable thing. And so Hot Pursuit 1 I played when I was rather young, maybe middle school age. And it was a lot of fun, like, setting out speed traps and stuff, like, or, like, laying down, like, a spike strip and then, like, trying, like, the cars want to stay on the road, right? So you lay the spike strip, which covers, like, two-thirds of the road, and then you try to block the other third with your police car, because they want to not hit you. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this franchise the two times I've played it.
Dan, what about you? Did you ever play the game?
I did. I don't know which ones. It was similar where it was you could play. It probably was the same game where you could be police or you could be the one chasing. And I thought that was a really fun dynamic at the time, like being able to race. I was not very huge in the racing games unless it was like Cruising USA for like the Sega Genesis, or was that Sega 64? It was, I don't remember. But for me, like, I'd play racing games and then eventually get bored with them. But as Matt mentioned, it had a little bit more to it. But once like Grand Theft Auto came out, I'm like, I feel like that's the joy of running away from the cops was much more fun in that game than Need for Speed. I tried the most recent one, or one of them that was on Xbox One, a little bit where like you go and it's like more open world, but it was just like it didn't really grab me. So it was like a demo, so I don't know if there was more story to it or anything like that. But so I have a little bit of experience with the franchise.
And we're actually going to have this 3-for-3 for the first time in a long time, because I did actually play Need for Speed once upon a time. I couldn't tell you a whole lot about it. I remember playing it and enjoying my time with it. But like Dan, I was not a fan and still am not a fan of most racing video games. I think I got into like F-Zero back in the day because that was like groundbreaking. It felt like, you know, something you'd never done before whenever that came out. But other than that, I don't think Twisted Metal counts. That's about the only other one. That's just more of a demo derby. But I just never could quite get into the straight-up racing one. So I did enjoy Need for Speed a little bit more since it had kind of a little bit more of that angle to it. And then I kind of had tapped out of video games by the time Grand Theft Auto came around, so I never got to play that. But I do remember enjoying Need for Speed for the most part. Matt, since you might have had the most experience out of all of us playing the game, what kind of transition do you feel like there, what kind of reflection was the movie on the game? Did you feel like it had anything to do with the Need for Speed video game?
Well, Need for Speed, like I said, it's just a series of street races, so like there isn't usually a story to it that I can remember, so like they had to inject 100% of that story. You know, usually when you're playing the racing video game, it's not like, hey, your ex-girlfriend got stolen by this jerk and he really hates her kid brother. Like there's none of those elements. I would say that the first street race, felt very Need for Speed, where, like, you know, it's like everyone's taking slightly different paths, but they all have the same end line. And honestly, the final race where you're racing and slowly other people are getting taken down by the police is also very Need for Speed. But if you were to total the time of this movie, which is like almost, no, over 2 hours? 2 1/4?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. The racing is about 10 minutes of that.
Right. So
percentage-wise, they didn't do a good job, but like they did manage to capture the feel of the games, kind of.
Yeah, it did have racing in it, so I guess that, you know, that's an element, and it did have, you know, the same types of cars, I guess, that you would have seen in Need for Speed. And I read that that last race that's in the movie, where they're kind of going on the coast and heading towards that light tower, is straight out of a game, straight out of one of the games, that level, and kind of there was a apparently a mode in the game called Knockout or whatever, where you did try to have a race like that where one by one the cars were knocked out of the race entirely. So I guess that somewhat reflects the game. But outside of that, like you said, there's obviously a whole bunch of other stuff they decided to throw in there as well. Dan, did you feel like this was a video game film, or could you take the video game aspect out of it and it would change nothing?
Honestly, never felt like this was a video game movie. Like, if you showed me this movie and asked what was this based off of, I'm like, Fast and the Furious, but different. Like I mean, I guess because it's, you know, based more so on a racing game, but even just in its presentation, like the tone of it, it didn't necessarily, you know, fit what I would assume would be more of a Need for Speed type of game, which is, you know, it's very action heavy. It doesn't seem like it would be nearly as dramatic as this is. Again, I haven't played some of the newer ones, so I don't know if there's more of a story mode that was similarly modeled after. But, I mean, I guess the sense of it has car races based off a car racing game, yeah. But I don't know. It just feels a little bit more self-serious than I would expect from a game based upon, or a movie based upon Need for Speed.
If you were to, like, pull me back, like, when I was big time into video games, like maybe in the late 90s or something around that time period, and you were to ask me, like, I've seen a lot of these lists in recent years, you know, what video game should be turned into a film, or what video game would, you know, would make the first good video game film, et cetera, those types of conversations and lists. If you had asked me that in the late 90s, I don't think I would ever have chosen a video game film that was a racing video game, or, you know, like a video game that was based on racing to turn into a film. Like, that just seems like the worst possible choice. When it comes to like story and things that you can pull out of that game and put on the big screen, like it just is, it's like bizarre. Like, I guess there's been a lot of bizarre choices when it comes to turning a video game into a film, but definitely a racing one seems like it would be last on the list. It's clearly something that was trying to capture the Fast and Furious fandom, or that same type of effect and box office draw that maybe they had, but yeah, it seems like a weird type of a video game to turn into a film. Just a quick side story here on why Hard Candy Mandy, Amanda, is not here today. You know, originally, when we started this whole process, we didn't own most of these video game films, for good reason, obviously. And we had gone to a used DVD store to see if we could find any of them, like, dirt cheap, like $1, $2, $3, etc. And we probably came home with, I don't know, eight of these films, and paid like less than $20 in total. And it was, you know, a good...
You got ripped off, I'm just saying. I'm just...
We did probably get ripped off. And that's why, you know, and we are giving some of them away, like we've talked about for the iTunes reviews. So we're not even going to have anything to show for that money, thankfully. But I had Need for Speed in the pile of garbage that we were about to purchase. And Amanda said that I could not add that into the group, which had the likes of House of the Dead and all the other types of films that we've talked about, Doom, and just also garbage. And I was surprised that Need for Speed was the one that she said, I will not let you spend money on that film, which was going to cost, I think, $2, $2 or $2.99, and she would not let me purchase it. So we did not purchase it. And she was watching this film the other day. She did watch the film. For the record, she didn't flake out on that. She did watch the entire film with me. And she did not want to be on this record today because she said she would have absolutely zero to add about this movie, which I can totally understand why. So we're giving her a pass. She also has some other reasons. There's wedding planning going on, and
other things going on. So just not worth her time to even talk about Need for Speed. So we're kind of doing it for her here today. Just like this whole video game podcast series, we're watching them and talking about them so you guys don't have to, or so we could find those hidden gems and maybe open your guys' eyes to a video game film that might be worth watching. I don't know if we've achieved that part or not, but let's turn and switch gears to the actual film. Like I said, this is a 2014 film written by George Gaddins and John Gaddins, produced by DreamWorks, and it is directed by Scott Waugh, stars Aaron Paul, Dominic Cooper, I always say this name wrong, Imogen Poots, Ramon Rodriguez, and Michael Keaton, released back in March of 2014, 2 hours and 10 minutes long. Let's start with how you guys felt on the movie overall. Matt, even though it might not be this great representation of the video game itself, does it work as a movie, and is it comparable to something like Fast and the Furious, or how does Need for Speed work or not work for you?
Oh, man. Like, so, it's functional as a movie, and you should definitely compare it to Fast and the Furious by saying Fast and the Furious is shorter and better and has better acting, which is hard to say about a movie with Vin Diesel and Paul Walker. But, like, I mean, it's a functional movie. It doesn't need to be over 2 hours long. I mean, it's a movie about two races. Like, think about that. Like, even Talladega Nights has more than two races in it. And also, you know, functions comedically. Like, it's just bloated. Like,
damn it.
It introduces characters at the beginning, and, like, immediately, like, you can even see it, like, I live tweeted while I was watching this, like, that character's gonna die. Like, I knew immediately as soon as a character came on screen, that character was written into the story to die. Like, I don't need that. The story doesn't need that.
Dan, is bloated the best word for this, or what's your take on Need for Speed as a film?
Bloated is good. To me, it's self-serious or overly self-serious is the word that comes to mind. Like, when I first started watching this, I was like, is this the right movie? It's just the tone of it. It had a score that was reminded me a little bit of, like, Moneyball, and it felt, like, so overly dramatic. What is, like, right from the beginning, like, why is it so sad? I thought this was about car races. I don't know. It just didn't click for me right away. And, like, this has a lot of talented actors that have done a lot recently, but it just, you know, it's like a car that has a great frame and engine, but you put in, like, garbage for gasoline and it destroys itself. I think bloated is a good word, because it's way too long and it needed to be edited a great deal, and it gets to the point where, you know, a lot of we're here for the car chases, that's Need for Speed. But they get to the point where it just becomes overly redundant, and you know, I do appreciate that it was well directed, and those car chases were well done, and, you know, using physical and real life cars, not really relying on CGI. You can certainly appreciate that, but it's just, I don't know, the scripting was really bad. The redemption story that was trying to make it just felt so forced. Not forced isn't the right word, just unearned. Like, you know, you have this character just trying to overcome this horrible thing that happens in the beginning of the movie, but it's also kind of like not really his fault in a way. So it's like it wants to redeem him, but at the same time not put him in a place where he really needs that much redemption. But and then the characters themselves were really uninteresting, or it just felt like it was trying too hard at times just to be other things. It felt like a movie that the director had one vision for it, and then the studio, okay, but do this because that's what they did in Fast and Furious, so do that. And it just conflicted, and then it ended up, like, just settling in the middle and making it what this is. So we've seen much worse films, but in the sense of, yeah, Double Dragon's a much worse movie on every stretch of the imagination, but it also has, like, a tenth of the budget with this. So this to me is almost worse, because you have more to work with and you end up doing less in the sense of enjoyment.
Yeah, the budget for this film was $66 million. It did have a box office of $203 million.
So I believe that's worldwide. So it did make its budget back. I think in North America, domestic, it was like 43, 44 million. So it didn't quite make its budget back just domestically, but obviously when you add in everything else, the 159 million that it made in other countries, you get to 203. Did not open number one. I think it opened number in third place for the weekend that it came out. So it obviously wasn't a huge box office success in the United States. A couple questions, because you know, obviously we brought up Fast and Furious a little bit. I honestly had to lean over to Amanda in the almost the opening sequence and be like, okay, so that guy's playing the Vin Diesel part, right? And this guy is playing the Paul Walker part? Or, I mean, it seemed like they were almost directly trying to put some of these types of people in here. It's just seemed a lot forced, I guess, is the best word. Like you're saying, it's overly serious, overly dramatic, and trying to force something where it should have just kind of been fun and fast, you know, racing with nice cars. And I don't know what else you can do to make it interesting, but it definitely didn't work overall as a film for me. I'm curious, kind of breaking down some of the characters, because I think one of the big problems, I mean, there are so many problems, so I don't want to make it seem like there's one thing that's causing this film not to work, but Aaron Paul as the lead actor in this. Just want to read what Michael Phillips of the Chicago Tribune said. Obviously, he makes a lot of appearances on Film Spotting and obviously writes reviews for the Tribune, but I think he puts it best as far as Aaron Paul goes. He says, the actor's idea of simmering intensity in the context of Need for Speed comes off more like serial killer in the making than a lead talented, you know, lead actor. Did you guys... What was your opinion on the cast overall, and what is Michael Keaton doing in this movie, Dan?
I don't know. I have no idea what Michael Keaton's doing in this movie. He's like crazy radio jockey. I'm not sure. He's just, you know, he's getting into his character. It's a Birdman. I'm not sure. I guess I didn't mind Aaron Paul. I in the sense of like the words he was saying weren't all that great, but I thought his performance was okay. Like, isn't his intensity was, I don't know. It was a little. There was like a falseness to it in a way. Like, I don't know if I was just because I'm thinking of Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad, where you see this guy, he's trying to be ultra cool, pump his chest up, but you know it's underneath he's just kind of like a dork, or not a dork, but I don't know. Like, he didn't seem like that ultra cool type of, you know, clearly there's a lot of references to like something like Bullet and Steve McQueen with like that silent confidence, and he's not Steve McQueen. Not many people are, and I don't know. Like, he just seemed like they tried to combine Paul Walker and Vin Diesel into one character, and it didn't necessarily work for me.
That's what he said. That's what when I was like, wait, who's playing the Vin Diesel role? Amanda's like, he's playing both of them combined. So that's funny that you said that.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't know. I feel bad for like even saying much about like the actors in this, because when you're working with the material that they were given, I don't know if anyone could do a better job. Like, I don't think if you got Daniel Day-Lewis, he would make that part work, to be honest with you.
No. I think they had the deck stacked against them. Matt, was there anybody that you found most appealing, or you felt was most effective in this environment, or are they all just working with a bad deck so they can't do anything?
I thought Michael Keaton gave a great performance, and it was like amazing that they had the best actor in the movie just sequestered. Like, you don't need to be anywhere. You never interact with any of these characters. You talk to maybe the best of all of the cast. You talk to maybe the best one on the phone for a minute, and that's the only interaction you have. You just sit here and just act and you know, do it right. Maybe if he had been on set with the rest of them, they could have had, you know, some lessons given to him. But like, he does not belong in this movie. His character doesn't make any sense. Like, what does this character do? He hosts like an online radio show, and then he sets up a race where he chooses the start and end point. You don't pay to get into the race. It's invite only. The people race have to, at the end of the race, give all of their pink slips to the guy who wins the race, but he's not there to physically enforce that rule. And it's such a big event that the police find it, even though it's also being broadcast to the internet, so the police could find it just by Googling, hey, where's that race happening? So, like, he's just a guy who sits on a radio show, and people with $1 million cars race because he says so?
And he doesn't get in trouble.
And he, yeah, like, he's not committing any crimes, I guess. He's just sitting in a house talking about how people should... I don't understand it. Like, his character serves no function for the movie and doesn't need to be there. Like, he does not need to be there as a character.
He's like, the only thing that kept me going, though.
He was the best part of the movie. He didn't need to be there. And maybe that's why they added him, is because they're like, oh, hey, this movie is very crappy and lackluster. If we throw the rest of the budget at Michael Keaton and get him to act off screen, like, all of these scenes could be shot after the movie was done and just, pretty like, retroactively reworked into the story.
There's a good chance that those scenes are from another movie, and they're like, well, no one's used these, so what if we just put this into this and...
morph these together. I had a question for you guys, because I wasn't sure if it was just the way that I watched this and the format that I watched it, but the sound design of this film, I believe sound design, I might have the wrong terminology there, but was it hard for you, like, the car sounds, the racing sounds, the mechanical sounds of the film seemed like they were exponentially louder than any of the dialogue. And I didn't know if that was because they were trying to get across the point of what it would sound like and feel like to be involved in these races or around these cars, or if it was just the version that I was watching. But I literally had the volume all the way up as loud as it could go just to hear the lines that were being said. And then, like, as soon as someone stopped talking and it went to, like, a car or race or anything like that, it was, like, deafening, and I had to, like, turn it down by, like, 60. So did you guys have any problems with the sound, or is that just me?
I think that's you.
I didn't have any issues with the sound. I mean, certainly the engine noises and things like that were pronounced, but I actually thought technically it was actually well made. Like, I could see this director being a great, like, stunt coordinator or, you know, someone you would bring in to design the action sequences of a movie. But no, I mean, maybe because, like, when the dialogue was being drowned out, I was like, oh, for it? I'm like, that's fine with me. But no, I didn't notice it.
There's a scene that takes place at a hospital between two of the characters, and
I wanted to talk about this. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I wanted to talk. So I was so confused by that sequence. I'm like, did I miss something when he gets naked and sexually assaults a woman and then leaves? And I'm like, I'm supposed to. Why did that happen? Did I miss something? Like, I was rather confused by that.
Yeah, that was a bizarre scene, and I didn't understand that as well. As another thing that had nothing to do with anything. Like, at that point in the film, they're going through the recruiting montage type thing, where it's like, oh, we're getting the gang back together, we're gonna do this thing, almost like you would see, like, in a heist film or something like that. Like, it's, hey, let's go get this guy, let's go get that guy. And apparently when that guy was summoned, he decided to strip all the way down to nothing and just do that at, like, the top floor of a huge building and go through all the elevators and stairs naked. Like, did that show us something about his, like, that he's just wild and crazy, I guess? But aren't they all because they're street racing? Like, I didn't understand that either. And I had another question, too. There is a shot in one of the very first sequences where they're obviously out on the streets and racing around and trying to escape from the cops or something. I don't remember what was going on. There's like a truck and a trailer that pull out into the intersection, and then it just stays there, like, causing the option that other cars might hit it. Like, who's driving a truck trailer, pulls out into, like, an intersection of a major road and then just sits there? Like, that seemed like a very forced, dramatic point that they were trying to make, and I felt like there was things like that throughout all these different times where they're trying to get away from the cops or to the cops. Like, they're in a sequence later on in the movie where they're trying to outrun the cops while they're going across country or whatever it is, I don't remember, and the cops are coming up with all these different ways, like, oh, we're gonna do this, we can't do spike strips because this will happen and whatnot. So their grand plan was for one of the cops to ghost ride his squad car into the street and hit them? That happened, right?
I don't remember a ghost riding the whip scene.
No, he's like in the woods, in the like trees, and he gets out of his car and puts something on the car so that the gas will go, and literally just, like, lets his squad car go out into the oncoming traffic to try to stop these racers. Like, that is the cop's grand plan.
This is, like, the final race?
That one happens, yeah, towards the end in the final race where he's just like, oh, I'm going to, and that's how one of the cars gets taken out. Because this guy just, like, sacrifices his squad car to just run into him. Like, what? Why did, at no point do they just put something across the damn road to block the road?
Well, I mean, what was great was, like, real early on in the race, right? The race had just started. Like, you hear some police chatter and someone goes, wow, we've set down some spike strips. And then someone else goes, ah, those cars are going too fast. We wouldn't get them set out in time. And it's like, you know the whole course of the race. Like, you know the whole course of the race.
Yeah. Right?
And their cops are set up along the race, like almost like checkpoints. So there's no way you didn't have time to set that up.
And at that point, they're not in earlier on in the film, I get it because they're in a regular area where they can do all these little left-hand turns, right-hand turns, down alleys, across, you know, different. At this point, they were basically on a road that was by nothing else. Like, yeah,
no turns or anything.
Yeah, there was nowhere for them to go except for straight for most of that point. Like, at what point do you just not get three or four squad cars and put them across the road and make it so they can't go anywhere? Like, instead of ghost riding your car into them. So there was a lot of things in this film, obviously, that don't make sense. I mean, it's probably silly for us to even point out the ones that we noticed. But the other thing that I wanted to point out, I guess, in a similar way, if there was like a top 10 list that somebody wanted to do of the worst time elapse montages ever, this one would have to be in the running. It looks like it's even fake the way they do like the seasons and the lighting and this, that, and the other. Did you guys notice the time elapse montage that they do?
I don't even remember.
I think I remember what you're referring to, but it wasn't something that really stuck out to me regarding everything else that didn't work. But we talked a little bit about the car chases minus like the lack of logic. Did they work for you at all, just on like a visceral level? I mean, considering it's, you know, the big thing this was like there wasn't CGI, it was all physical. Did that at all, you know?
I liked watching the fact that these were like very exact. I mean, I'm not a car person, so I really don't get into too much of like different car types, etc. But I liked the exotic styles of all the cars that we got to see, and obviously they're a lot of cars that you don't get to see on an everyday basis or whatnot in some foreign, you know, prototypes or whatever those ones were. But so I kind of liked seeing some of that in a realistic fashion. But then some of the crashes didn't. I mean, I guess they were, but like the main crash that causes the big, you know, change and the big, tragedy, so to speak, that seemed not real at all. Like,
it did seem a little excessive. I'm like, okay, he's slipping, that's bad. Okay, he's on fire. Okay, now it's like, I was just waiting for like a shark to come and attack it. Just keep going over and over again until like our tornado comes by. And like, it's just like, wow, man, he's really dead. Like, you really have to.
It's like those speedboat races where they're just driving and then all of a sudden one of them just flips for no reason.
Well, and I get that those cars are probably like super light and whatnot, but the amount of air that was underneath that car when it goes like straight up into the air, I was like, that seems a little bit insane. But you're right, it is like those speedboats, so maybe that was like a legit thing, but it just looked so bizarre. And then like Dan's saying, it just like one after the other, where it was whether it was hitting things or catching fire or whatever, it was just like enough. We get that this person is probably not doing okay inside that vehicle, but. Yeah, I don't know. What other things is anything that you guys like in particular, or other things you want to point out that were ridiculous? Matt, start with you.
I liked how there was a really, really intense fueling scene where like two people had to get on top of their cars to refuel, and it was like super intense. Like, are they both going to survive? Are they going to be able to get away from the cops? And then 10 minutes later, they had this super intense refueling scene where it's like, oh man, they're refueling again. Oh, and the cops are here. Are they going to get away? Why did they do two of those in 10 minutes? Two refueling scenes that are super action tense? Like, why? That was a thing that happened. Like, the guy, I like to think of the main character, who I'm just going to call Dime Store Joel McHale, like, isn't a criminal, right? He goes to jail because his brother crashes a car and he goes to jail for 2 years or something. That's really weird. And then, like, he gets out of jail and then immediately is like, how about I break all of the laws? So I think the movie is setting a precedent that jails make non-criminals into criminals, because he immediately was like, okay, I'm gonna break the law by leaving the state. I'm going to break the law by leading, 100 cops into fatal car accidents. They're, like, flipping over cliffs and stuff. Like, and then like, another one of his friends is like, it's okay, I'm going to steal multiple helicopters. He stole multiple helicopters.
And from the same airport. Like, he was just there. He was at the same airport.
Stole a helicopter, landed it, hopped out, jumped into a different helicopter to steal. Like, he just kept stealing helicopters. Eventually, he got arrested for helicopter theft, I think. But it doesn't matter, because he still got to view the race.
Hey, lady, can you pull up Google for me? I need to type in the site for this race so I can watch it from my jail cell. That's fantastic. Yeah, I didn't get the quick lack of care, I guess, or whatever, from these seemingly people that are just, like, street racers. Like, we haven't been introduced to any criminal, like that any of them have, like, this bad streak or just lack of, I guess, care for the law or whatever, or just people's lives in general. And it's like the film just flips a switch and they're unnecessarily causing death. Like, I understand that you want to get across the country to do this and you got this revenge thing and you want to right your wrong, et cetera, et cetera. But that is a different, there's a difference between doing that and being like, and in order to do so, I don't care how many dozens of people I kill as I do that. Like, it just seemed like there was a weird lack of care for just, like, human life in general from a lot of characters.
They were all so unlikable. And, like, they almost, like, a guy almost runs over a homeless person, and then, like, the group message, where they're all in this group message, just start making fun of the homeless people. It was so terrible. Like, I couldn't like a single one of these characters.
Dan, what about you? Anything that you found was more of a positive for the film, or would you like to heap on any more bad parts?
No, I mean, I can't really think that much positive. Like I said, I thought technically it was fine. It was just everything else. And again, even though those races were well done, it got to the point where they were just overdone. And, it, you know, even like an exciting action sequence can get too much. And yeah, it seemed there was like a lack of logic. I guess some of the cast did have some good camaraderie with one another, over, you know, for the most part. But again, it just felt like it, you know, like a cheap knockoff version of other movies that we've seen before and not really providing anything new or of merit. So yeah, I mean, I like the little homage they had to Bullet, which I guess is not a homage if you directly just show a scene from it, but. You know, I enjoy it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I should watch Bullet again. It's been a while. So I didn't appreciate that reminder.
Their homages or their nods to other films were a little bit too on the nose for me. Like, you're showing Bullet. You're calling someone Maverick. Like, come on now. And at one point, they utter the line, hey, this looks like a scene out of Speed. I got news for you guys. There was nothing in this movie that looked like it was Speed. Like, don't give yourself that much credit to say that you resemble a good film.
And to be clear, that comes when he purposely tries to egg a cop on to race him because he's trying to win the affection of some other person's girlfriend. And I don't even, I give up. I don't.
All right,
breaking me as a person.
Yeah,
this entire retrospective of video game movies, man.
It's not a quest that I would recommend to most people to do. Take our word for it. On Rotten Tomatoes, this film did not do too well either. 22% on Rotten Tomatoes. Metacritic score of 39. Apparently, audience though polled by CinemaScore gave the film an average grade of a B+. I don't understand that one, but I guess if they actually went to see this in the theater.
Yeah, I think most people, like, they probably got what they wanted because they probably went for the action sequences and they got them. And they, I mean, if that's your thing, I think you probably would walk away happy. And I could see this appealing to someone who, like, if you love the first, like, two Fast and Furious movies, which were more about street racing, maybe you appreciate that this is more about that too. And it does have a lot of car porn, which I seems like none of us are big car people. So maybe for those people, it's really cool. But for me, I'm like,
I mean, if you were a fan of the Fast and the Furious franchise from Go, and if you were a fan of the Cars franchise from Go, and you just like love anything that has to do with cars, then this might be something that you like. But I would venture to say that both of those franchises are better. They have to be. And I know there was talk of doing a sequel a couple years back, like 2015, 2016. They were saying that they were going to do that there was a sequel in the works, but I have not heard anything like that since then. You know, when it comes to grading this film, for me so far in this retrospective or this series that we've been going through with the video game films, it seems like you fall into one of four camps. You're either in the UA Bowl camp, where you just can't even make heads or tails of the fact that this is an actual movie and it's not functional in a lot of different ways. Or you're kind of like that camp cheese, like we're not going to take ourselves serious, just be fun and ridiculous with it, which you know you get like with Street Fighter and Double Dragon and Mario and some of those types of films. You're seriously attempting to do some type of like adventure fantasy quest type thing with varying levels of success, like maybe you would get with Tomb Raider or some of those types of films. Or you're in the camp that I would put this one in, which I think so far consists mainly of like Doom and Need for Speed, films that failed to figure out that they either should have gone full camp and not taken themselves serious, or they needed to start from scratch and find a way to better be a serious video game film, because it is like they want to be a serious video game film, so they avoid the camp and the cheese factor, and that would have been better off to just do that. Because for me, it fails in both ways. Like, it's not an entertaining film, and it's not a fun, goofy, you know, watch with a bunch of friends and have some drinks and just make fun of it and enjoy it. Like, it's neither, so it's utterly pointless in my opinion. So it's near the bottom for me. It just depends, like, do you grade something like this worse than you grade House of the Dead and Alone in the Dark and stuff like that? Because for me, it's Doom and this one, and then those are all towards the bottom. So I'm going to give this one like a 3 or 4 out of 10. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of similar, because to me, it's like I kind of appreciate a bad movie that realizes a bad movie, and it's like, okay, we're not fooling anyone here. Let's give them 80 minutes and leave. We're not, you know, let's not torture them. But I feel like this one, I think didn't realize its failings. And, you know, I guess that's something we all do, but I don't know. Like I put it in that similar category. Like, what is that Wing Commander that we watched as well, where it was like, it's not awful, but it's just ultimately really forgettable. And I think it's probably functionally better than a lot of the movies we talked about, like in the sense of like put together more and there's more thought and craft into it compared to something like Double Dragon, but it had the talent involved to be something much better than it is. So I'm similar to you. To me, it's like a 4 out of 10, especially because it's like 2.5 hours, and man, like it does not need to be like that's just like. That's like aggressive. Like you know, why do you gotta do that? Like just I hate using length as like a negative, but sometimes it works because it just becomes like you just become numb by the end. So
yeah, it's almost as if someone watched like the first or second Fast and the Furious. And unlike the people that were in charge of the Fast and Furious franchise and understood what they needed to do and what worked for them, like they saw those films and took all the other parts. Like the stuff that doesn't work for Fast and Furious is like what they focused on and just said, well, we're going to be like them by doing these things. So I just don't get it. Matt, what do you think for score and grades as far as Need for Speed goes?
I think 4 is the right one, right? Because it's functional. It's not broken as a movie, but it's unnecessarily long. The acting is not amazing. It's not the worst acting we've seen. But, like, it's just unnecessary. It's one of the most unnecessary movies. It's like there's very little to love, but there's nothing to truly hate other than the fact that it takes up so much of your dang time. Does anyone else think that the villain looked like a shitty Carl Urban?
Is that who it was that he was? He reminded me of somebody, but I couldn't place
it. Hey, it's Tony Stark's dad. Come on.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why
Dominic, I recognize him. Dominic Cooper?
Yeah, that's why I recognize him.
It's Tony Stark's dad.
Yikes. Well, he's much better at that.
He's a good actor. He's just... And he is in a Fast and the Furious movie as a villain. So, I'm pretty sure he is. I could be wrong, but I thought he was in one of the... I don't know. Everyone's in a Fast and the Furious movie. There's like 18 of them, but...
Right. Well, so not overall positive review here from the Cinema Geeks. Imagine that on a video game film. We're not raving about this one. I don't think anybody needs to see this. I could not honestly recommend this to anybody. I just don't. There's no point. That's way too long, and you're not going to get anything out of it unless you just absolutely go bonkers for car porn. Then I guess have at it. But that's going to close the chapter on Need for Speed, which means the only ones we have left were ones that were released after we started this series, which would be the likes of Warcraft, Assassin's Creed, and possibly the latest Tomb Raider. So, Dan, do any of those elicit any type of excitement or hope for you for closing out this series on a positive note?
No, not at all. Not in the least. I saw Warcraft. I have no interest in watching Assassin's Creed, and I don't know. I don't really want to watch Tomb Raider again because we did it once, and it's like, no.
We might be able to use a clause there and get out of that one because we said we were only going to do the first one of each franchise.
I'm somewhat interested in Rampage because it feels like that is exactly it. It's self-aware in a good way, like. But outside, I don't know if we'd ever do that because that just came out the weekend we're recording this. But no, I'm not really looking forward to it because
and like, we have to be able to stop this at some point, right? Matt, any interest in you? I know you've seen a few of the ones that are yet to come out for the series that we're doing.
I have.
Didn't you see? You didn't see Assassin's Creed?
No.
Oh, or Warcraft?
No.
Oh, so these would be first time watches for all of them for you.
I've seen Warcraft, but that's about it.
I've played the games extensively, but like, I don't need to see the movies.
Maybe we should just end this right here. I don't know. We can cover all the other ones in like brief reviews or something like that, but it has been a bumpy journey for sure. We will at the end of all of this probably do some type of culmination episode where we crown the best video game film ever. Is that possible? That's like that one list, right? The worst video game films of all time. We'll see. We're gonna close this out somehow, some way. But if you want to actually hear us talk about movies that are not based on video games, then you can check out our other series that we have going on right now, which is going through the filmography of Kevin Smith. So we've been journeying through there. We've already had a few of those episodes out, and we continue to put those out. So you can definitely look out for those as well. And there's other fun stuff that we have planned coming up in the future, as well as probably a review for a little film coming out called Infinity Wars. The latest Marvel film, we might just be able to sneak in a review for that as well. Dan, are you excited for that one?
Oh, yeah, I'm a little bit excited for that. I hear that's going to be pretty popular, just the word on the street. No, I'm hyped. Like, it was my most anticipated movie of the year, I'm not going to lie. And, man, I just keep watching that trailer, I think, a billion times, maybe.
Matt, does the next Avengers film, does it have a shot of dethroning the crazy successful box office earnings of Black Panther?
Oh, man. So, like, I believe when we did our draft or whatever at the beginning of the year, that I was of the opinion that Black Panther was going to beat it. So, when I say now that I might have been wrong about that, looking at the pre-sale numbers, know that I'm aware.
But Black Panther, I think it just moved into what, number three all time in domestic? I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it passed everything except for the last time I checked, it was behind, I believe, Avatar and Force Awakens. Is that the two that it was behind? something of that nature, but it has gone crazy at the box office, way more than I thought it would. So you definitely have a leg up on the draft for box office. We'll have to see if the Infinity Wars can rival that or not. We have that one, and we have Solo coming out here in the next 1 to 2 months. So it should be interesting. We'll have a good idea of who's going to be in the driver's seat when it comes to that box office draft here by the time summer begins, technically. All right. So, Dan, what else do you have going on over at Geekcast Radio and your other stuff that people can check out?
I have the Comic Concierge podcast. I recently spoke with Mark Russell, who is the writer of the Flintstones comic, the current Snagglepuss comic, and an upcoming Judge Dredd book. That was a really fun discussion. And if you've not read the Flintstones book, highly recommend it. It's quite amazing. And that will be up probably shortly after this is released.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys should check that out, as well as the posts that he's been making as far as comic book reviews, etc. And I'm also actually talking a little bit of comics over at the Geekcast Radio Network, too, in Mike's Pullbag podcast. I've been guesting for the last couple episodes on some Back to the Future comics. So if you want to hear about that, you can definitely check that out as well. Matt, if someone wants to get a hold of you or talk to you on Twitter and find more ways to get in touch with the Twitter famous Matt Fridley Sent, how do they do that?
Oh, I'm at Fridley Sent.
Hey, what did that one die off? Did it reach its peak?
So, it had slowed down for the last week, but today alone, I think I've probably gotten 50 retweets.
Nice, nice, growing, ever growing. Dan, how can people get in contact with you on Twitter?
I am at Movie Revolt.
Mine is at Optimus Solo, and if you want to berate Amanda for not being here today or give her heck for bowing out of one of the video games that we're reviewing, that is at Hard Candy Mandy, Eyes Not Wise, I believe is how it goes. And you can tweet the overall show as well at Cinema Geekcast. But that does it for this chapter of the video game film series. Tune in next week to hear us talk about something that's not having anything to do with video game films.